This week, we do something about these Asians coming in. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
to remind
Process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode 25. Today is April 5th, 2012. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
And this is Rob.
And I loves me some Marion Barry.
We need more Marion Barry.
Yeah. So, for those that don't know, our little intro there came from one of the many fabulous Marion Barry quotes that are out there. One of my favorites is that all laws are racist, that the law of gravity is racist. So that's a story that's in the news right now, and this week we're doing current events, so we're trying to catch up after a couple of weeks off for spring break. We're all back now, tanned and well-rested and ready to tackle some of the big headlines. But first, wanted to say to all our new listeners out there, send us some feedback. We'd love to hear from you. If this is your first time listening, or maybe you've listened to a couple episodes, but you haven't gotten in touch with us yet, hear from you. Have you joined our forum yet? What are you waiting for? There are thousands of topics out there for you to read and comment on. Visit forum.midwestpeaceprocess.com and add your voice to the conversation, or just send us a note, feedback@midwestpeaceprocess.com. Or you can comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/midwestpeace. Or, you know what we done did? We up joined. Yep, that's right. For all you tweeters out there, you can follow us at Midwest Peace. Oh yeah, it's a full frontal social media assault. That's right. We are a freaking media empire over here.
You've been busy on spring break.
Yeah. Yeah, tried to keep it real, you know. That's what we do.
Does this mean I have to get a Twitter account?
No.
Oh, good.
Can I randomly put hashtags in emails that I send around?
Sure.
Seems to be the rage.
So, that's how you get in touch with us. Now we're going to give you something to get in touch with us over. What do you guys want to start with?
Start with Trayvon Martin.
Okay. All right.
Let's do it.
It's kind of been dominating the headlines recently. So I won't bother explaining what the story is. I'll assume all of our listeners have heard something about it. And I'll have a link in the show notes in case you haven't. But the interesting thing in this story to me is that there's a lot of talk about racial profiling in conjunction with this story. And the reason that's interesting to me is because, you know, when you hear racial profiling, it's usually regarding, you know, police that are doing that.
Yes.
In the performance of their duties. But there are no police in this story. You know, the main guy, he was, you know, leader of his neighborhood watch or whatever. So he's not a police officer. And so my question is it racial profiling when the leader of your neighborhood watch is doing it?
Yeah, I didn't even know people were claiming racial profiling. There are people using that term?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not the right use of the term.
No, it's not.
Rant, one thing that seems to show up in the conservative mindset is the idea that racial profiling is that if you got a crime suspect and he's on the loose, that you can't say what his race is. Oh, we got a white male or black male or Hispanic male. You know, you can't say that. That's racial profiling. That's not what racial profiling is. It doesn't have anything to do with racial profiling. So that always drives me crazy. That's another good misuse of the term racial profiling.
Yeah.
But it happens all the time.
Well, they don't say it to circumvent or to avoid racial profiling, right?
Racial profiling is when you see two people that have no suspicions and you go and you harass one of them because of some statistics or some, you know, racial basis. You know, you got a white guy walking down the street, black guy walking down the street. Let's go harass the black guy. He might be doing something.
Right. I understand that's the standard definition of racial profiling. But then when they don't tell someone's, when they're looking for a suspect and they don't say what race, are they doing that in an attempt to not, you know, hurt anyone's feelings or what are they, what's the point of that?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think that's the reason. Is it?
I don't know. I'm asking. I think it's dumb that they don't, because you weed out a lot of people, but then...
Well, here's the thing.
And it leads to profiling.
I was discussing this with a friend of mine who's a former Kansas City cop, and, you know, he pointed out that the police are free to do racial profiling, and, you know, that's part of their job, really, is to, you know, notice suspicious activity. And part of that involves when you see somebody in a neighborhood where you know they don't have any business being, and part of that judgment can be based on the race of the person you see.
Right.
And as long as you're able to articulate that to a judge, then it's, you know, it's admissible. It's not out of bounds as far as our justice system is concerned. So it doesn't, you know, it is racial profiling, but there's nothing wrong with it.
Right.
So
that's fair enough.
It only becomes wrong when you harass somebody who's clearly not doing anything.
Right.
Right. Right.
Right. The test there is, can you articulate exactly what it is that, you know, is wrong?
Yes.
Right.
And if they're not doing anything, then yeah.
So here, I'll reveal maybe something unknown to our listeners, that your podcast producers are all white males. Go ahead and admit that. So as I proposed to my white male brethren here, do you ever feel like you've been racial profiled positively?
No,
I don't think so. And I think I've been profiled for having red hair.
That guy looks crazy. I mean, I feel like I have. We'll get back to your red hair. Boy, people are finding out a lot about us tonight. Yeah, I just remember rolling through a stop. You know, the cop was right there, and he didn't pull me over. And I thought, you know, I mean, what do I look like? You know, just regular old, you know, white schmo guy. You know, like, so. And I often wonder, you don't know. I don't know, but it just made me think. It was just an interesting thought that appeared in my brain. I'm like, did I just get off there? You know, I don't know. It was a weird feeling.
It reminds me of that. There was an old episode of the Chappelle Show where he goes undercover as a white person. Did you ever see that one?
I think I did.
And he goes into the bank to apply for a loan. They're just like, here's the money. Take it. No, just take it. You know, like all white people that go into the bank, they just hand them money, right. You know.
Well, there's an old Eddie Murphy Saturday Night Live one, too, where he gets on the bus and the last black guy leaves and then, like, the party lights come on, you know, there's, like, dancers.
Yeah, so, okay, I don't think racial profiling really plays a role in this Trayvon Martin story at all, but the other interesting thing to me about this is George Zimmerman, the neighborhood watch guy, he calls 911, all right, which is proper procedure, I would say. If you see something, you know, I mean, he's armed, which, I, you know, obviously I don't have a problem with him being armed.
Right.
But as when he is fulfilling the role of neighborhood watch, you know, I can see how, if it were my neighborhood, I might actually have an issue with that.
You know? What, that he was armed?
Yeah.
Yes.
That he is representing me then, you know, as the neighborhood watch captain or whatever, and he's walking around armed just because...
Because what if I call somebody and say, hey, I left the stove on. Can you break into my back window? I left it open. Can you climb in the window and, you know, go turn the stove off? And he sees you and shoot your friend or whoever.
Like, I have no problem taking responsibility for myself and my property and my family and, you know, defending all of that with my weapon. But you know, can I trust somebody else to defend me and my property with their weapon? I'm not sure that I can. So
right. And you're as a neighborhood watch, you're kind of de facto giving him that authority.
Right. So he's armed. He calls 911 to report this suspicious guy walking through the neighborhood. The 911 dispatcher tells him to back off and wait for the cops to arrive. Okay? That should have played out. He should have backed off at that point and said, okay, I'll wait till they get here. But he didn't. So, you know, everything that happened after that, in my mind, is his fault. Because, you know, he continued to pursue it.
It's very trusting of the cops and the government there, Jerry.
Well, no, I'm not. That's kind of irrelevant, you know.
Right.
I agree. Cops could never have showed up, you know. But it's like if you're going to call 911, you kind of you're bound by then, you know, whatever the dispatcher tells you is what you have to do.
Right.
So,
well, not by law. He was not bound.
Maybe not
by law. They've said that he was not bound by law to heed the warning of the dispatcher to pull back and let the police handle it. That when the dispatcher told him, we don't need you to do that.
Yeah.
He's not required to listen to that or to follow that advice. That's what I've heard. Now, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, so maybe where I heard it was wrong, but that's what I've heard.
Do you think his race has played into this at all?
I think it has been distorted. I think that he's being presented as a white guy, and he's not.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with it. Because
you think that's partly his name? You know, if he was Jaime Garcia, it'd be different.
Right. Yeah. If he was George Martinez, or you know,
Right.
It's been one of those, it's a compelling story because it's like almost every day for like a solid week, there was some new juicy detail that was getting, you know, released through the media and it kind of changed the whole dynamic of the story, you know? It was like, it just kept doing these 180s, you know? Initially it was, this guy completely overreacted and he shot some young kid who was carrying Skittles and iced tea, you know, and how tragic. And then the next day it was, this, you know, kid's 17 and he's been suspended from school for three times, one of which was for drugs. And so he's kind of bad seed and he probably had it coming. You know, it's just like,
yes.
Whoa. Yeah, okay, go on.
With each new detail, you know, like the entire dynamic of the story just flip-flop back and forth.
Yeah, so I think my strongest feeling about the case, of many strong feelings, is maybe you conservative types can explain to me the kind of the urge to you know, so the story comes out, we want to know what's going on, and there's this urge to like dig up some past and like, oh, let's see when the last time he went to school is, or what his Twitter pics were, or, you know,
right.
Why, like, it should be irrelevant to the whole issue. You know, who cares if he's a blessed angel or he's a, you know, kind of a scumbag. It doesn't mean that he, you know, deserved to get shot that day, depending on what's going on. But it's like the feeling is like, well, we need to turn the tide. We need to go kind of prove to the public somehow that this guy was a punk.
Yeah,
I don't get that. And that was that. Like, if we talk about our beautiful Drudge report, you know, I saw a lot more links on Drudge about what a punk the guy was than I did about the story or what was coming out.
Did you count them? Because
I did.
They could easily be prejudiced by your own views there. And when you talk about, you brought up the character assassination thing before, and that's when this first came out. for lack of a better term, they were whitewashing his character.
Oh, there right.
With quotes from teachers. Oh, he was majoring in cheerfulness. And that I remember reading that.
Right.
And they made it sound like he was this sweet little kid who just was bebopping down the street, you know, whistling skipping home and got blasted. And then it's like, well, that's not quite accurate. So it's not really character assassination as it is what I called character balancing.
Yeah.
Like, your story's not accurate. Here are some details or some history here that so
well I could totally see that. I know what you're saying, because that's kind of like, as Jerry's talking about the juicy details, that was kind of the flow of it. You know, here's a kid, you know, at the halftime of the basketball game going for soda and Skittles, and he gets, you know, shot up. And he did major in cheerfulness. So then of course we found out all the other stuff. But so I mean, what's the motivation there? Like is the motivation there to balance out the liberal media or to do some correct reporting? Like, what are we aiming for? Why is that a juicy detail?
I think it has to do with Florida's stand your ground law, because that is ultimately going to be what this entire case hinges on. And
tell us about it.
And it's a fairly recent change in Florida law. You used to have to, you know, if you were confronted by, you know, an assailant, you had to make a reasonable attempt to escape. And if you couldn't escape, then you were justified in using deadly force against them. But you were required by law to make some attempt to escape first. And they changed it now. So you are allowed to stand your ground no matter where you are, whether you're out in public, you're on your own property, anywhere, anytime, someone assaults you and, you know, you fear for your life, you can use deadly force against that person. Okay, so that is the law that's in play here for George Zimmerman, because he's claiming he feared for his life, so, you know, he used lethal force against Trayvon Martin.
Right.
So there's an awful lot of people that want, you know, that are in favor of that law and want to see it remain in place. And I think they see this case as being, you know, potentially
could be a pivotal case here. Well, whether that law is kept or not.
Potentially a counterexample of why they shouldn't have passed that law in the first place. You know?
Right.
And so to kind of minimize the ammunition that they might have, you know, they're trying to portray the assailant now as this, you know, as the bad guy. And they don't want you to question whether or not he was the bad guy, because then you won't question whether or not the law is worthwhile.
That's an interesting point of view. Yeah, I didn't really put it in context to that. I mean, for me, in my worst, you know, moods, I just feel like it's just what we do. You know, when something bad happens, first of all, we're going to rush to judgment. That's pretty easy. Pretty good at that.
Yeah.
And then after that, we're going to just take sides of who we always take sides with. You know, we're
right
that certain people are, you know, certain people are going to, you know, side with what, maybe it's just race based, or maybe you feel for kids, or maybe you live in a gated community. I don't know what it is, but everybody's just going to retreat to their camps.
Yeah,
it kind of made me think a lot of the Duke Lacrosse case. You know, when everybody had everything all sorted, you know, in the first day when that thing came out.
Right.
And then it didn't turn out quite like that. understatement.
Yeah. Sorry for a second, but back to a previous comment about racial profiling. There's an article here. It's clickorlando.com. News story about Sanford, Florida. And the last line is, Martin's parents say their son was a victim of an attack fueled by racial profiling. So there you go, Rob. It has been mentioned.
Yes.
Well, the other... Okay, back to the news and the knee-jerk reaction. What about the 911 call that was doctored by NBC, or edited? Sorry, I'll say a clinical term instead of a conspiratorial.
Yeah, because they've come out now and apologized for that was a mistake.
What did they do? Remind me, for me and the listeners who aren't up on it.
Well, go ahead, Jeremy.
They brought it up. They originally played the tape. You hear Zimmerman talking about what he sees, and then he says he looks black. They cut out a part where the dispatcher asks him, is he white, Hispanic, or black?
Oh, so really?
It made it sound like Zimmerman just, you know, he's, oh, there's his kid walking, he's just kind of, he sounds like he says looking about. I don't know what that means. I would think lurking about would be a better, but whatever. He looking about, he looks black. And that's how it sounded.
Right, right.
So you're like, oh, yeah, this guy's definitely, you know, he's black, therefore he's doing something bad. But when you hear the real tape, the dispatcher clearly asks him, does he look white, Hispanic, or black?
Right.
So here's another interesting spin on this story. Like, within a day or two of the story breaking, I'm watching this show on YouTube that I sometimes watch. It's called The Young Turks, and I'll put a link in the show notes. But it's they were talking about this story and, you know, how tragic it was, because this was still during the phase where it was, you know, all the photos of Trayvon Martin were from when he was 12, and, you know, he was just this innocent young child that had been gunned down under horrible circumstances. So they're playing, the 911 calls had just been released, you know, all the tapes had just been released, and they're playing them on the show. And then just by chance, they got a comment from one of the YouTube commenters, said, hey, it sounds like he says effing coons during the 911 call.
Right.
And, you know, so it was just kind of a casual remark. So then in the next episode of their show, they delve into this more deeply and, you know, they kind of do some sort of, I don't know, enhancing of the audio or whatever to see if they can isolate these words and figure out exactly what it was he was saying. He's kind of sighing when he says it, and it's under his breath, so it's pretty hard to understand. It could be a lot of different things, I think. But, you know, what's interesting to me is that happened on this YouTube news show like 2 weeks ago, and today I turn on CNN this morning, and they're doing the exact same analysis.
Oh, my gosh.
Yo, engineers who's, you know, isolated that bit of the 911 call and enhance the audio so that they can tell, you know, what he's saying, and they come to the conclusion that that is in fact what he said, which it doesn't make any sense to me at all. I don't know why, you know, if he was going to say that, why would he say it while he's on the phone with the 911 dispatcher?
Right.
Well, he probably forgot. No, I could see him doing it. I mean, he's in pursuit, you know, it's a downtime in the call. He's waiting for the cops and he's frustrated and getting his juices up.
Yeah.
And the dude is obviously agitated. He's not like, hello, young sir.
Yeah.
How are you today? What kind of Skittles did you buy? I like the tropical ones. You know, I think he was looking for, he was obviously angry, right?
I wouldn't know that I would classify him as angry.
Well, did he say the effing coons?
I don't know. I haven't listened to that. I meant to, because Jerry told me about that last week, and I just forgot to go listen to it.
So what's your guess? I mean, we could all rush to judgment, so why not rush? I can rush faster than you. We'll do a round robin here. We say, what do you think happened, and then what's going to be the outcome legally? All right, I'll go first.
Okay.
So what I think happened is, I think the dude was looking for a beef, and he probably picked the wrong kid. This is George Zimmerman I'm talking about. I think the neighborhood watch guy was looking for a confrontation, and got probably more than he bargained for, and had his gun there, and got in over his head into something and ended up shooting the kid. What's going to happen? I'll say he gets off and it causes a whole poo storm.
Poo storm, as in like L.A. riots, post-Rodney King poo storm.
It'll just be like Florida riots, so you just, like, you know, hang out at the palm trees. I don't know. Gated community riots.
Because I could see that happening. See this, well, this generation's Rodney King event. You know,
that's what this article, the article I referenced, where at the end of it they mentioned racial profiling. The article is, City of Sanford prepares for response to George Zimmerman decision.
Yeah.
And Rob, I don't think you're too far off the mark on your assessment there that this neighborhood watch guy, he makes a comment in there, they always get away, like something has been happening and maybe he is a little fed up with what's been happening. And so maybe he was looking for it, and he should have just walked away when the dispatcher recommended that he do that.
Yeah, I do get a sense that he was a little over-eager to be the guy there in, you know, at that time, at that place, you know.
Yeah, well, and it brings it back to the stand your ground law, which makes that all legal. You can go up to somebody, get into a beef. Oh, I got my gun, I feel threatened, pow, over.
Right.
Yeah, wild, wild Florida.
Wild, wild East. All right, so let's move on. I guess I'll just mention briefly that we have a, I won't say a similar story, although some of the aspects of it are similar here in St. Louis. Yeah, here we go. A St. Louis County police officer killed a 15-year-old black kid in North St. Louis County. This just happened Tuesday night. And the cop is claiming that the kid was armed. And so there are some parallels, I think. You know, it happened at night. Kid was in a place where, you know, he was maybe not supposed to be. And I don't know. Just mentioning it because this story may blow up here in St. Louis the same way that one's blowing up out in Florida.
Yeah, the difference being he got shot by a cop.
Right, right.
But that the parents are asking for an investigation by the FBI.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I still go back to if the story that's being told is true, he was out, it was 10:30 at night, he was out with other kids,
yeah,
roaming around a neighborhood. His parents thought he was at a cousin's house. And what is a kid doing out, a 15-year-old doing out, roaming around that time of night?
What's he doing? You were 15 once.
Yeah, and I wasn't out roaming around like that. My parents made sure I wasn't.
Okay.
Certainly not carrying a gun.
Well, right. I mean, yeah, but that doesn't convict him. That's not the...
I didn't say it convicts him, and I'm not saying that just because you're 15 and out, you should be shot at.
Yes, that's exactly what you're saying.
No, like I said before, don't put yourself in stupid positions or stupid situations. This kind of stuff doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and it kind of comes down to, I mean, what is it? It was kind of in the woods in the back. And so it comes down to the fact of what do you think that gun was doing there? You know, did the cop then run back to his car and plant the sawed off rifle? You know, or are they just laying around and, you know, he's happened to be standing right by it when the cop shot him? You know,
That's a funny detail of the story, too, that they keep calling it a sawed-off rifle.
Yeah.
I don't know what idiot saws off a rifle, but, you know, whatever.
Makes it easier to carry.
Yeah.
Yeah, more firepower that you can more easily conceal. The story says that it was still in his hands when he was shot. You know, when the other police did arrive and they found him there laying on the ground, the gun was in his hands and there were...
Well, of course, that's going to be the story, regardless of whether it actually happened that way or not, right?
I don't know. I mean, what's the difference whether it...
I guess my distrust of law enforcement is showing now, but you know, if they're going to cover up an accidental shooting like that, that's how you do it, right? You get the sawed-off rifle out of the cop's car, you know, out of the trunk of his crew.
Out of his frame of suspect kit that he carries in his trunk.
And they all do.
I'm not saying the police are totally clean, but, you know.
But that's how all these defenses go. I mean, if this ever goes to trial at all, I mean, that's going to be the defense. You know, that it was all a plant.
Right. And hopefully that lawyer will make the point that, you know, nobody in their right mind carries a sawed-off rifle. So if that is in fact what he was found with in his hands, it had to have been a plant.
I would say the contrary, that the police are smart enough to know that it would look phony if they planted a sawed-off rifle on somebody.
Right.
Maybe.
So if they're going to plant some kind of weapon, it wouldn't be a sawed-off rifle.
You know, the inventory in the trunk is not always the best.
Yeah, he'd already planted it on several other crime scenes that evening. He was running low on his inventory, so
he was running out of drop weapons.
It was fast and furious.
Okay, so I have one story here that we don't have to spend a whole lot of time talking about, but I thought it was interesting. It was I guess more of an editorial in CNN a couple of weeks ago. Let's see. This is about how do you fix Congress? And, you know, they talk a little bit about how Congress's approval ratings are at an all-time low. And this guy's answer is, and I'll read this, Congress no longer represents the will of the people, and it hasn't for a very long time. A quick trip back to fifth grade history class reminds us that the House of Representatives was established as the lower house intended to be of the people, according to James Madison. But population growth has cut the ties between representatives and those they represent. A seat in the House of Representatives has gone from representing 33,000 people to more than 700,000 today. America basically has two upper houses of Congress with less and less representation of the people. So he's proposing that the size of Congress be expanded. So instead of 435 members, if you wanted to maintain the ratio of 1 per 50,000, then you need, let's see, about 3,000 members in Congress.
No.
Yes.
And so
3,000 too many.
Well, obviously, once you reach numbers like that, they're no longer meeting face to face. So, you know, you have to use technology that's available now to kind of virtualize all of the, you know, all the debates and the votes and everything else that takes place in person now. That kind of stuff would have to happen virtually. And once you're resigned to doing that, then it means that, you know, they don't spend time in Washington anymore. You get elected to the House of Representatives, you stay at home, right? You stay with your constituents in your home district, and you're there 365 days a year.
Good.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one plus. And so they would vote on everything via the internet, and, you know, I'm obviously in favor of disbanding government completely in the House of Representatives. So this, you know, this isn't really the solution in my mind, but it at least illustrates one of the many flaws with our government. And, you know,
I don't know that getting that ratio down really does anything to help me feel more represented.
You'd be a larger fraction of the pie. And I think I know what your plan is, Jerry. You're like all those guys at work that want to do the work from home thing just so that they could not work. So you're like, if we make them all work from home, how much are they really going to legislate? You know, like I could legislate when I'm in a nice wooden room with some nice chairs and those little green lamps. I love those green lamps.
Right.
You know, it gets you in a legislating mood.
That's right.
But if you're going to get your sweatpants on, you're sitting at home on the internet, you really going to write a law? That's the end of government right there.
You got it.
That's a very, very ingenious plan.
You saw right through my failed facade of legitimacy.
Yeah, you need to gather and have a meeting and wood paneled rooms.
Yeah.
Gets you in a legislating mood.
Right.
So what do you think is wrong with Congress? Because it does seem broken. And it doesn't seem that, like, not from a partisan sense. You know, not like, boy, it was great when the Democrats had it. You know, I would guess that a Jerry would say that Congress is a government construct and destined to fail anyway. But from a constitutional perspective, all you constitutional lovers, you know, it's working just like the great founding fathers projected.
No,
and it's all busted. It is.
It's not working like they. No.
Why? What part?
The part where everything goes, or not? Shouldn't say everything, but most things go along party lines. There's special interests that have too much influence over Congress. That was not the vision of the founding fathers.
Tell me about the special interests. I wonder. All right. What I think about special interests is that. They're involved in all the things that we don't see. They're all, you know, working on the legislation and the little tweaks of ands to ors in bills to try to help their, you know, their funders. All the stuff that we don't hear about. But on the big stuff we do hear about, why do you need a special interest to vote party line? Don't you just look at your ticket, you're like, oh, mine's got an R stamp on it, I'm voting no. I mean, you don't need a special interest or a chamber of commerce designation for that one.
No, those two things weren't necessarily tied together. So those are – I'm listing things that are wrong about Congress, Rob.
Right. Those are wrong, yeah.
Okay. So do you now suddenly agree or what?
Well, no. Oh, how would you fix it? You know, I understand it's busted and everybody votes party lines and you got these kind of jokers in there, but it's supposed to be an equal branch of government, right? And why is it so doing nothing? Why does it seem incapable of doing anything it's meant to be doing?
I think it all goes back to money and them wanting that seat for what it can get them instead of being a seat of service.
So it's free market.
That's not supposed to be the market.
Yes. It turns out it is. It has become a market.
Okay, well then that's what's wrong. There, you just said what's wrong.
There you go. See, free market's bad. I win. Checkmate. See you next episode.
Well played, sir. Well played.
Jeremy, you agree?
No, free market's not bad. Free market... in a that controls the decisions of a government, maybe, yeah.
Right.
They should be doing they should be governing in a way that is best for the country and then their state, and then, you know, it trickles down. It's the federal government, so they're supposed to do what's best overall, right?
Right. They don't.
Yes, they don't. That's what we're talking about. Trying to. So how do you fix it?
I don't know. How do you fix it? Make it bigger.
I don't think making it bigger changes much.
No, I don't.
I think you still have people tagging things onto bills that don't need to be tagged onto because it's their pet project and you decide to, I don't know, give a big loan to, say, a solar energy company because you're...
That wouldn't happen.
Your buddy just... happen to buy some stock or has
now
a
you're just making stuff up.
Or even, you know, some little business, international business. You give a big chunk of money to maybe Brazil and it just so happens that, you know, one of your other buddies has an interest in Brazil's oil business. And
that can't be. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what goes through the mind of the average voter, if we even have an average voter, and anything goes through their minds? I mean, isn't it like for in Missouri, like Kit Bond? Maybe you guys can explain this. I never understood this. So we had, as all states do, we have two senators. That's how it works. And
what? When did that happen?
And we had Kit Bond, and we had the other seat. And somehow the other seat was a beautiful battle. It was exciting. I mean, we had Claire McCaskill against Jim Talent, right? Remember that one?
Yeah.
That was a good one. That was exciting. You know what Kit Bond did when he came up? He's like, "Hey, remember me? Kit Bond in there." Why? Like, why did he get the automatic in? It was a total contradiction about how those two races went. So it's the same seat, you know, it's one seat out of two. It's the same state, the same politics. One was all exciting with this big, you know, campaign budgets battling it out, and the other one was just like an automatic. So why is that? Here's what I think it is. I think what goes through the mind is people say these other states are taking up our pork dollars. And that Kit Bond, he's on some high committees, and he's going to get pork for my state or my city or what I want to do. So I'm sending that guy back in there. He's on some high-ranking committee leadership positions. And so they send him right back in. Isn't that it?
I don't know. I think anytime you have a name like Kit or Bud or Chip, you know, he's wired into all the locals out there in around the state, and they're going to keep electing him. Like he has all his buddies out, his farm buddies out throughout the state, and he also has the support of the big defense contractor here. He kept making the Air Force buy F-15s when they said they didn't want any more.
Yeah, but Jim Talent was on some armed force committee, right? He was in with the Navy or something. You know, it's not like I think these other guys are slouches.
You know, I think Jeremy might be onto something a little bit anyway, because, you know, one of the things about Kit Bond that always irritated me was he didn't even know how to pronounce his own state.
Depends on where it was.
Yeah.
If he was in the cities, you had to say it differently.
Yeah. But, I mean, the guy went to Princeton, and he was a Rhodes Scholar.
Right.
So, you know, he knew better.
But we ate it up, didn't we? We ate it up. I mean, the guy didn't even have to run
on there. Yeah, you're right. That's interesting that, you know, those two races for virtually the same seat would be that different. And you may be right too about him being the senior senator and having his hands on certain levers of power.
But that was a plus. Maybe that's the key. Maybe this is the key element is that everybody hates pork and earmarks when those earmarks are not for your state.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that there are enough people paying attention, you know, to those kinds of details to actually get somebody elected.
I agree with that. I think that's really maybe that's the larger issue, that we are also disengaged.
Yeah.
We don't see what's happening. It's just kind of out of sight, out of mind, and we know things are jacked up. We don't really know why. We don't have any clue where the money really goes.
Yeah. I mean, for every person that goes into the voting booth and casts a ballot against Kit Bond because, you know, he's against Kit Bond, for every person like that, there's probably five or six who walk in and don't know anything about either of the candidates, but they've heard Kit Bond's name on the news before, so he
has
name recognition. So I'll vote for that guy because I know who he is, even though I don't know who he is.
Really? You think Jim Talent didn't have name recognition? I mean, it's not Kit Bond, but he was a senator. He was a chump senator.
I mean,
I don't know.
Well, Kit Bond, you know, he's a legend in Missouri. I wouldn't say Talent ever approached that level of prestige.
Right.
I don't know. I think, you know, you might have a point, but at the same time, I just I think you're putting too much faith in the electorate, because they're generally morons.
I'm optimistic.
I know.
You're delusional.
Okay, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we had a few more stories, and so stay with us. Interesting story here he wants to talk about concerning a waitress who got a $12,000 tip.
Yeah, good day, right?
Yeah.
This was in Minnesota. I just happened to stumble across this. Not from Drudge Report, Rob.
I think it was on Drudge, though.
Well, that's not where I saw it.
That's where I saw it. Tell us about it. I didn't click on it because I don't click through things on Drudge because I don't want to give them any money. So I just stare at the headlines and seethe.
Waitress worked at what's the name of this place? I'll give them a little free publicity here. The Frying Pan in Moorhead, Minnesota.
How's that spelled?
FRYN apostrophe pan.
Frying pan.
Been working there for 18 years. Married, has
still
five
not assistant
kids.
Manager.
Yeah. I don't know if they have a fry later, but shout out to Dave Attell there.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Had trouble making ends meet for a long time. Suddenly, one night, lady comes in, leaves a shoebox on the table. Waitress sees it, chases her down. Hey, you left this. Lady says, no, you keep it. It's for you. Turned out to be a $12,000 tip. The waitress, they did call the police because, you know, how often do you get a $12,000 tip? So they just wanted to check it out and make sure it was okay. Police confiscated the money, said, if nobody claims it in 60 days, you can have it. Then she was told, well, 90 days, you can have it. 90 days came and went. They still didn't give it to her. They told her, it's been determined that this is drug money, and here's a $1,000 reward, but you don't get the 12 grand. So she's suing the police department. Police claim it's drug money. They used one of their... what do you call them? One of the police dogs did a sniff test on it and had a hit for marijuana. Apparently, there's some law in Minnesota that if money is in contact with narcotics or controlled substances, has residue, has a scent of it, then it's considered drug money and is therefore part of an investigation, confiscated, and you're out of luck.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. How in the hell is that law even? How did that get by?
Yeah. I remember reading years ago that like half of all money in circulation has cocaine on it.
Yeah, I remember reading something similar. I don't remember all the
and you know, something like 90% it has fecal coliform bacteria on it. You know, so
well, your butt's the safest place to keep it.
There's people out there whipping their ass with their money too. Yeah, that's just ridiculous. I mean, I don't know how you can defend that as reasonable. I would love to hear that argument in court.
Well, yeah, and I never understood that. Why? Okay, so it's drug money. Why don't police departments that confiscate this then use that money for something good?
Yeah, like buying World Series tickets or something.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I understand the whole, well, it's evidence, we have to keep, okay, we'll catalog it then. They have serial numbers on them. And use that if you need it for evidence. This is the money we had, and, you know, here are pictures of, they show pictures of a dead body in a murder trial. They don't wheel the body in and...
Right. Maybe they should. That would make
maybe they should
trial a lot more interesting.
I don't know. It's odd that somebody's going to give this lady a $12,000 tip, but I just don't. I think that law is overreaching.
Yeah, a little bit.
So, if I'm standing at a county fair, and a police dog next to me sniffs drugs on the money I have, they take my money right then. Is that how that works?
Apparently.
So what would you do now? Say it happens to you tomorrow at your food service job, and you get a $14,000 tip because you're even better. You even got more skills. Now what would you do? You know, it's likely that there's drugs on there. So what would you do?
I think this tells you to quietly go home and not say anything to anybody about it.
Here's what I would do. Yeah, I would quietly go home and don't buy anything. Like, that would just be like my pretzel money for a year. You know, I don't eat that many pretzels.
You spend $14,000 on pretzels every year.
I love pretzels. But that would be how you do it, right? It would be like your snack budget for 10 years. I mean, you still have $14,000. You wouldn't go out and buy a car with the drug cash.
Well, that's how you should do it.
No, I mean, they're not going to look.
Most people don't have that control.
They're not going to look for marijuana residue at the snack machine. That's part of my plan. And then all the other money I have, I'll go and buy stuff with. It's a perfect plan.
Well, maybe snack machines are the great money laundering places in America. You put money in, and then you immediately hit the change thing. Like, you change your mind, you know, so the change kicks change out.
It is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the price of Pop-Tarts keeps going up in mine. Like, it's like it almost fluctuates like the oil prices. It used to be like a dollar, and then it went up to $1.50, and there must have been outcry from the Pop-Tart population. It was down to a buck and a quarter.
Who knew that was a leading economic indicator?
I think the jelly in the middle is made from petroleum. I think that's
what it is. Pop-Tarts are not food. They're a product. So.
Yeah. And the Pop-Tarts, they were a buck in the vending machine and a buck at the gas station. And I thought, wow, that's pretty good for the vending machine. I mean, usually the vending machines kind of get your premium prices. You know, you're on location.
Well, yeah, hot plus spot. You don't get taxes if you.
You don't. Yeah, and there was no tax. And I was like, I found the holy grail of bargains here.
Did you buy a whole bunch of them at once?
Yeah, with my drug money.
Investing in Pop-Tart futures.
It's the brown sugar and cinnamon ones. Those are going to go off the charts.
You guys want another news story, or we? What's the?
I got one that I
want to okay
real quick here. This is a blog post. The name of the blog is The Tireless Agorist, and the headline here is Greece Surrenders to the Underground Economy. I thought this was kind of interesting with all the problems that Greece is having right now, and you know the discussions about whether it's going to have to leave the Eurozone and you know go back to using the drachma, and of course they've had bailout after bailout from the EU, and each successive bailout has had more and more restrictive terms imposed, you know, like more austerity measures and more oversight of their economy by external, you know, people keep rioting because of the austerity measures and because of what they perceive as a loss of sovereignty, you know, because they're...
That worked well on Germany. They should keep doing that. Yeah. Holy cow.
Anyway, this story is about how... I'll just read a quote here. The Greek parliament recently passed a law encouraging, quote, alternative forms of entrepreneurship and local development, unquote, including exchange networks such as Volos, giving them official nonprofit status for tax purposes. So this means, according to the author here, that Greece has officially surrendered now to the underground economy, and they're writing off a significant chunk of their future tax revenue.
Ooh.
Because, you know, they're basically saying, hey, you know, it's okay if you guys don't want to use the euro anymore. We understand. Go ahead and, you know, come up with your, you know, barter or come up with your own currency that you want to use or, you know, do whatever you want. We're cool with it.
Wow. That's...
And I'm just, you know, I'm wondering what the reaction of the rest of the EU is going to be when they see this. They're like, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
We didn't give you all of that money so that you could turn around and, you know, barter for chickens and, you know. You have to continue using the euro. You can't just bail on it.
Why wouldn't they, though?
What?
Bail on the euro.
Well, yeah, I mean, where is the incentive seems to be gone now for the Greek people to, you know, remain in the Eurozone.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Especially since it means all of this short-term pain for them because they're doing away with all of these government services that everybody's used to. And I don't know. I thought it was an interesting story. I thought I'd mention that. So,
it is interesting because it's interesting that on the surface it seems like the Greek government is getting on board with the people.
Yeah,
that's foreign to me. I don't understand.
I've never seen that happen before.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that I have a lot more to say about it. Other than related to that, the IMF was saying America needed to kick in more cash, which
yeah,
we need to tell them to go piss up a rope. They've freaking IMF. That
save it for next episode.
Jeremy's getting upset.
Fired up.
So I wanted to mention. For those that look at the show notes from our shows, we're going to start segregating the links that we include there. The ones that we actually talk about on the show will still be in the section called the missing links, and everything else then we're going to put in a section called the reading room, which is just links that maybe we've read that we found interesting. We want to pass along to our listeners and, you know, maybe we didn't actually talk about them on the show, but we didn't want to completely ignore them either. So make sure you check that out in the show notes. And we're gonna end with a clip from a YouTube video that I watched here in the last 2 weeks that I thought was pretty good. It's called Government Explained, and it's a guy who meets an alien who's just landed in a UFO, and he comes up and, you know, the alien asks him to take him to his leader, and, it doesn't go quite like that, but the guy's trying to explain government to this alien, and it's pretty funny, actually. It's about 10 minutes long, so I'm not going to include the whole thing, but I encourage everybody to watch that. So, think we're probably done, huh?
We're done.
So. Yeah.
We're done.
We started rested and ready, and now we're tired already.
That's right.
Didn't take long.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. Once again, connect with us somehow, some way, however you choose. Join the forum. Send us email. Leave us a comment. Follow us on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. We will see you next time.
Good night.
Bye now.
But there are some things government does that you don't like. Well, yeah, not everything government does is popular. Like spending on wars, for example. What is a war? It's when government basically spends the people's money on weapons and soldiers and then sends them over to the other side of the world to kill a bunch of people over there and destroy their country. I don't like it that government does this. Well, I can see why you might not like that. Have you humans reached the stage where you generally consider stealing, enslaving, and killing each other to be bad things? Oh yeah, we know that. Don't steal, don't attack, don't assault. But you give money to government and they use it to kill people. Well, yeah. But government does good things with tax money as well. Why don't you stop paying for the things you don't like and only pay for the good things it does? No, we can't do that. You can't just decide to stop paying taxes because the rules say that everyone has to pay taxes.
But the rules come from government, though, don't they?
Yeah.
So government made a rule which says that everyone has to pay them money. So everyone pays taxes because if they didn't, government would punish them using violence?
Well, yes, but most people don't mind paying taxes. Most people feel obligated to pay taxes and obey government laws because it's for the good of society. Society needs government, and that means we all have to pay taxes.
So just to make sure I've got this straight, government makes the rules and you feel obligated to follow the rules, even the ones you don't like, and it tells you what to do and threatens to punish you if you don't do what it says, and it uses some of the money that it's taken from you using threats of violence to pay for things you don't like and actually think are immoral, like mass murder.
Yeah, but we can ask it to please tell us to do smart things, and please don't take our money and use it to kill people.